Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank. My name is Lewis and joining me as always to discuss a pretty disappointing weekend for the Sharks family this weekend are my co-hosts Alex and James. Alex, I'll start with you because we all know you hate Bristol. How are you feeling after the last couple of days?
I've been better. It's not been a great weekend of sport, to be honest. The fact that we got away with the draw in the cricket has kind of saved me from going over the edge with other results, both in the rugby and outside the rugby. But I think it's disappointing, but I did see it coming a bit. And I didn't really have massive amounts of faith that we could turn Bristol over at Bristol in front of the crowd. So I think I benefited from only watching the game after the game. I didn't watch it live and watched it on Saturday instead. And that was a pretty painful experience, to be honest, to put yourself through it, especially when I realised we'd scored all of our points by half time. So watching the second half was pretty grim. But no, it's I can massively understand people's disappointment. And to be honest, I share it. I think it's just put the cherry on top of what has been a pretty poor season overall and raises some massive, massive questions going into the rest of the second half of the year, I think. And I don't know whether we'll be able to answer them before the season is out. How are you, anyway?
I mean, that really sets the tone for this week's podcast, doesn't it? Well, I mean, likewise, very disappointed. I didn't realise, you don't realise how much Sale means to you until you watch a game on Friday and you come away with nothing and it kind of ruins your weekend a little bit. But I'm sure all our listeners can attest to that. There was definitely a feeling of gloom out and about on Saturday and Sunday. James, what about yourself? How are you feeling?
I'm a bit disappointed, really. I think after the Wasps game, there was a bit of hope. Because I thought Wasps didn't, they acquitted themselves like all right. You could tell that they were kind of due maybe a performance, and it was going to drop at some point. But the same for Bristol, and we mentioned that in the preview last week, didn't we? That they were kind of starting to get there, starting to play a bit better, and they were going to win at some point. I thought we didn't deserve to win, but the scoreline was probably a little bit generous on Bristol.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's start there. You know, Sale obviously travelled down to Ashton Gate on Friday, get beat 32 points to 15. I think that's the very first thing we want to cover off, which is that 17-point winning margin for Bristol certainly flatters them a little bit. The game was relatively close up until the final minutes, and obviously it's Andy Yoren who scored a try with the clock in the red to take Bristol out to that 32 point total. You know, before then there was always hope for Sale to get something out of the game, but ultimately after the 18 minute mark, it's Bristol who came up trumps and actually ended up picking up a try bonus point and consigning Sale to getting nothing out of the game. So, Alex, you know, I'll start with yourself. You know, on the face of it, you know, this is a game that was very much sort of 50-50. You know, could have gone either way, two teams struggling to perform, etc. And, you know, and Sale get nothing out of it and Bristol get 5 points. You know, what kind of went wrong for the Sharks on Friday night?
Well, I mean, we'd conceded three tries before half-time and you just can't get away with that. It's just really, really poor. I mean, the Morahan try, the defence is just absolutely woeful. And, you know, our problem is that we have built a reputation on defence and we've built a kind of playing style on defence. But if you don't have that, then you're not going to be able to win games. It's as simple as that. And I think you are right. It was relatively even in that both sides weren't great. You could tell this is a Bristol side shorn of form. We've given them a bonus point win. They'll probably, it's almost an inverse of Wasps last week. You know, we were a side massively short of form and Wasps kind of let us get a bonus point win, having scored three tries in the first half. So I think that's the key, is that, you know, we don't have the rounded game to be able to let an area of our game slip. And if we let our defence slip, we haven't got the attack to manage to bring that back. And I think that's especially highlighted when we haven't got Rafi or Faf at scrum half, because that's where a lot of our attacking threat comes through. And, you know, if you've got Will Clift, he does a very good job, but if he's in a side where the defence is poor, then he's, you know, it's just never going to work, is it? So that's That's my massive frustration with it.
I think 15 points scored as well. You know, again, we'll get onto this in the three-word reviews, but there's a real sort of impotency in attack, which, like you said, Alex, it, when your defence isn't working and you're shipping three tries before half-time, it does really compound things. And it did feel like even at 25-15, for much of the second half, we never really looked like getting back into it. You know, James, you know, where do you think things went wrong for Sale on Friday?
Well, I was one of those where there was a lot of fine margin decisions and situations like, you know, ruled out tries where actually there were just really, really fine margins in all of them. And, you know, you're talking about millimetres here or there, and it would have been quite different. I thought actually we've had a pretty good start to the game. You're right, with the pressure on to be creative, we kind of, there's not a lot going on apart from like a little chip over the top, and we've been using it in every game recently. You know, we struggle to pick runners, and actually that's always been a problem with McGinty at fly half. It's not a criticism of McGinty, it's just that it's not that kind of player. And, you know, we need to be on the front foot to him to be a really destructive 10, because he takes the ball to the line and he often does the dummy or does a half break himself. And I just felt those fine lines just didn't quite go our way. I also thought we were very unlucky in the scrum. I thought, you know, Bevan Rod had to be, you know, sort of taken off really to avoid a prison sentence, because I thought he was just going to end up smacking the referee at some point. And I don't blame him. I really don't. Like, we haven't seen Bevan Rod, destroy is the wrong word, but obviously get the upper hand on an opposition tight head. And this is the first example I could see where it happened and nothing went his way at all. Whereas often I see him sometimes getting a penalty or it's just a reset where I'm thinking Bevan Rod's got away with that. Whereas this time it was the complete opposite. I thought he absolutely did one on John Afoa and nothing went his way. So I just thought it was referee decisions. It was like back to the old days. You know, you're away from home, just nothing went our way. I think that's the thing. What I'm trying to paint there, I suppose, is we're a bit unlucky to not come away with anything. But overall, the issues are the same issues every single week, and the table doesn't lie.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go through it. We're going to pivot to three-word reviews momentarily, but we kind of said this in our post-game wrap-up on Twitter. You know, Bristol was squeaky clean. You know, from a discipline perspective, we gave away a lot of penalties. Another 10 minutes with the man in the bin, always giving yourself a tough road ahead if you haven't spent any part of the game down a man. You know, attack, 15 points scored. You know, first half, you know, looked okay. You know, good inventiveness, you know, some inside balls, you know, changing the point of attack went pretty well, scored a couple of tries. Second half, didn't really create much. And what we did, you know, two tries ruled out, you know, rightly so, for, you know, knock-ons, you know, balls in the air, that kind of thing. Ben Curry, very unlucky. And you know, ultimately, you know, defence was pretty poor, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. You look at both of the Morahan tries, there's things, you know, the team certainly could do better. And a pretty poor showing, I think, as for the backs as a collective from a defensive standpoint. And you just add all those little things up, and it leads to a result where, you know, you do get beat on the road quite handedly. Maybe it shouldn't have been 17 points, but, you know, if that final score had been 25-15, you'd probably say that's a fair reflection of how the game went, rightly or wrongly. So, you know, three-word reviews, as you can imagine, a little bit negative this week, but thanks to everyone who sent them in. Anyway, Taylor Ross, last hope gone. Richard Higgs, pressure on Sanderson. Damien Hearn, lost our way. Jack Robotham, own worst enemies. Nicholas Watson, issues. Semicolon, discipline, attack, and Nick Frost, attack coach required. We won't talk about attack just yet. We'll sort of focus on the defence. And, you know, Alex, I think, I don't know if you agree, but the really frustrating thing here was obviously the manner in which Sale gave up those first couple of tries to Bristol in the first half. You know, the first one coming off the back of a rolling maul where, you know, they just completely ran over us. Luke Morahan, you know, cutting past Marlon Yard and Rob Dupree as if they weren't there for his first try, Bristol second. And then obviously that third try and Morahan second, the inside ball from Semi Randrandra, and it's an easy walkover. I mean, we knew there's a bit of disruption in the backs. We know players are playing out of position. Sam James obviously comes in quite late on for Rohan at 12. But, I mean, what went wrong for Sale from a defensive point of view in that first half? Because we were at sea.
Yeah, and I feel like the system wasn't to blame. You know, I think the system was well set up for people to make tackles. And sometimes it fundamentally comes down to the fact that if you don't make your tackles, then, you know, Bristol are powerful runners. That's, you know, it always looks easy sitting on, you know, behind on the sofa looking at the TV, thinking, well, I should get hold of Blake Morahan there. He's an incredibly powerful runner and he makes defences look silly relatively often. But, you know, this comes back to my point. With 77% tackle success rate in this game for Sale, we just cannot live like that. We have to hit 90% tackle success rate. And the tackles we miss usually have to come as a result of that blitz defence that we operate. And if we don't do that, because of the way we naturally create a dogleg and we naturally create gaps in our own defensive line, if you miss a tackle, then all of a sudden we leave half of the field wide open against a team with a massive amount of pace. And that's the issue, isn't it? That, you know, if you rely on that defensive system, when it works like it did last time we played Bristol away, then it's brilliant because it completely shuts them down. They don't get round to the outside. And, you know, if we didn't operate that blitz defence, they'd probably make us look quite silly as well. If we stood off them, you know, Randranda and Morahan and whoever else in that back line is good enough to hurt us in that way. But we just didn't execute our plan correctly. And that's why I think you have to be a little bit sympathetic. I know we get loads of grief for not going at Alex Sanderson, and this will not make it any better. But I think you have to be a little bit sympathetic to Alex Sanderson, and particularly Mike Forshaw, in that, you know, if the players don't execute the plan that you put them out there to play, you know, what on earth are you supposed to do as a director of rugby or a defence coach if people play like that? I mean, the second Morahan try is the most forward pass I've ever seen and cannot believe it wasn't checked, but that's the way the game goes, and I'm sure we'll have a conversation about refereeing at some point. But I think that's the issue, is that we set up in the right way to counter Bristol Bears' strengths. Unfortunately, we just didn't execute that to a high enough level of skill. Right idea, wrong execution. And that is then putting the spotlight on the other areas of our game and the other weaknesses that actually got completely covered up last season, because we weren't a good attacking side last season. Absolutely not a chance. We were one of the worst attacking sides in the league. We barely got any try bonus points. But this season, it's all of a sudden a massive issue because A, Alex Sanderson's had a pre-season, and B, the defence isn't working and we're not getting the results. So let's not pretend that, you know, Steve Diamond turned us into a good attacking side. Let's not pretend that this is a good attacking side on paper. It's not. And when you're playing Sam James at 12, I think that encapsulates half your issues. Because, I mean, again, we're injury dependent and Rohan and Manu not playing and Sam Hill being injured. But, so, you know, there is a partly a reason for it. But I just think these are problems that we've had for way longer than this season and way longer than the last year. You know, this is a massive systemic issue in this Sale squad. And it isn't going to be a quick fix. You know, you can't just go into the summer transfer window and a transfer window. You can't just go and buy a pacey back three player and expect it to fix everything. Albeit, you can probably buy an England quality 10 who might help in some way.
I think as well, we got a bit of a perfect storm, because I thought, you know, to Bristol's credit, I thought Harry Randall had a very good game, very much the sort of mix of game management and kind of creativity that you want. And what he did really well was he actually got the ball out the back a lot to Callum Sheedy and Sam Bedloe, again, both of whom I thought had really good games. Sam Bedloe in particular, obviously former Sale player, had a really good, strong first half, just being able to get the ball over the top of our blitz defence. We've obviously spoken about it, but we play very narrow and we jump up. And if you can get the ball over the top, it does create space. Randall was doing his bit to get the ball out to these 10 and 12, and his 10 and 12 were getting the ball out to the wingers, and they were finding a lot of space there. And I did think, you know, Sam James had a really tough game. You know, he's very... We know he's not a 12, he's never played 12, but, you know, being forced into that, he certainly looked a little bit lost out there, and there's obviously sort of a bit low on form anyway. You know, and I thought Marlon Yard had a really poor game, you know, from a defensive point of view as well. The problem we have is with as part of our defensive structure, you do ask players to make decisions, you know, very quickly, whether to jump out into the line, whether to, you know, sort of stay flat, etc. And BT picked this up a few times, but because Randall and because Sheedy and Bedloe were getting the ball to the outside, it was forcing Marlon to make a lot of very tough decisions. And for the most part, he didn't really get them right. And you look at the Morahan try, where he sort of waltzes in. Yes, people are going to, you know, quite rightly criticise Rob Dupree for not making that tackle. But you look at the positioning that Morahan's in versus Dupree, it's very easy for Morahan to stick his hand into the latter's chest and score a try. The problem is Marlon Yard has overrun the pass that's gone over. He's now on his back foot, so Morahan can cut inside of him. And then it's just a very simple case of just pushing the defender out the way. And it's just little things like that. That disjointedness in the back line really cost Sale in that first half. And, you know, that was the issue in the first half. But then, James, in the second half, you know, the game sort of died off a little bit until the clock was in the red. Bristol only scored two penalties and Sale didn't score anything. And what was the issue there? I mean, why did we look so far adrift when actually the scoreline was only 10 points in that second half?
Yeah, you know what? It's like watching our defense, like us, our attack is like watching teams trying to attack us last year in terms of like our defense, you know, where we just smothered them and it's just like sometimes we just left these teams just clueless, even teams like Bristol and Quins. We're like that against every team, like any team with a reasonable defense, whether it's a surge defense, rush defense, whatever you want to call it, or whether it's just people running corners or drift defense. You know, we just really struggle to break them down. And what we're completely reliant on is having a dominant collision and recycling the ball quickly and then getting, you know, beyond the gain line. Because then we actually have some good skill sets. Like the good example was the Ashman try right at the beginning, right, where we actually, you know, there was that kind of like shin out from Dan Dupria. Suddenly the defensive line's not there. Really nice inside ball from Rob Dupria. Really nice, like inside pass. We used to see things like that from Sam James every game, didn't we? And we just don't anymore. And we're relying on something happen which disjoints the opposition defence. We're not able to pull them out of position unless we win a dominant collision. We're not the only team in the Premiership that plays like that. The big difference, though, between this year and last year is that we're not winning those dominant collisions. The confidence isn't there to try that offload that gets you beyond that man in the same way. And I know that it's kind of double standards on this pod because we've criticised the offloads that just never going to happen and don't go to hand. So now we're criticising not trying them. But there's obviously clearly a fine line here. And when you're low on confidence, like people just aren't trying stuff, basically. And, you know, I also think that there is potentially an issue with Cliffy. I think, you know, I've been his biggest fan. But he's, you know, he's still coming back from injury, but he's also, you know, coming up to 34. You know, but next year he'll be 34. So, you know, is there a case there of, you know, getting to that breakdown quickly enough? You know, I'd be much more confident with Cliffy coming off the bench with 20 minutes to go and him seeing out a game than deciding whether you can trust Gus War. I think just start with Gus War and see what happens. He's the future anyway, you know, along with Rafi. And so I think you just start with that. And then if that's not working, you bring it on. So I think there's a few things that necessarily that just aren't working there. As I said, you know, we're also quite reliant on that little chip over the top, which then, if it doesn't work out, just gives away possession. So it's quite a high-risk manoeuvre for your only attacking weapon to be. And, you know, we aren't seeing the Dupree as being dominant this year. We're just not. I mean, either people have studied a lot of how to tackle them or something, but I don't know about you guys, but you just don't see them. They're not playing poorly, but they're not like dominant figures on the pitch where they turn up and you're like, wow, these guys are just shrugging people off for fun. They're getting over the gain line. Something doesn't feel quite right in terms of the energy on the pitch. And in terms of, you know, looking at Sale now and how we win, you know, it's kind of discipline's always a key problem as well. When attacking with 14 men clearly is difficult. Also, you don't get any continuity of possession yourself. Like, we don't go through many phase plays. Like, honestly, we don't. There's not phase after phase. There just isn't. We just don't seem to play like that anymore. You know, you'll be like two phases, box kick. Or two phases, chip over the top. You know, we don't even try, like, first phase strike anymore. We're under Diamond, we used to say, first phase, we don't play a strike move. If we didn't score a try from that, we wouldn't score a try the whole game. We don't even do the strike move anymore, you know. So I honestly don't see anything in our attacking play at the moment which would scare teams at all. I just don't. I don't think there's any player who I think is genuinely, yeah, without Faf or Rafi, with that sort of pace and that kind of sniping around the sides. And there must be ways to do it. Like, you look at the Leicester team, right? They've got a lot more pace than we have, right? But what we're going to have to consider with George Ford's arrival is what he does is pick the right option. So, honestly, I don't know whether it's that we don't have any options for McGinty to choose to pass it to, basically. You know, look, thinking about the George Ford thing where he's just picking the right option and there's loads of options there and he picks the right one. Is it that we don't have the options, or is it that McGinty's just not selecting them? Because for me, like, it's like looking at the same thing every week and it doesn't look like we've got an attacking structure at all.
I do think there are options. I just think those options don't have the pace that other options have in other squads. So, you know, if Marcus Smith's got a runner, he's got Esterhazy, he's got Northmore, he's got Tyrone Green, all of whom, if he gets them, if he selects them as an option, they're getting round the player that's defending them. Our problem is that we're giving it to Sam James, who is quick over a long distance but not got much acceleration. Rob Dupria, who does have acceleration and therefore is the one who probably makes the most line breaks. Or Marlon Yard and Byron McGuigan, who just haven't got the level of pace that those players like Quinns I mentioned have before. You know, and if a lot of our players do seek contact as well, that's not helpful. And I think we also suffer from the fact that AJ loves to be involved, and it's a brilliant sort of characteristic to his game in defence. But in attack, we were talking last week about AJ going in at nine. That just stops our whole playmaking ability, usually, because we've got Rohan or Manu at 12. And therefore, we talk about that second ball player. Even if you've got Sam James on the field as that second ball player or Rob Dupria, they're usually standing too far away from the ruck to come in and influence it. And that's what we did so well against Wasps, is that when the scrum half was out of action, which Cliffy was often against Wasps, for being caught at the bottom of a ruck or whatever, AJ would go in, but Rob Dupree would be there to step in. And I think the issue against Bristol, or part of it, was that Cliffy was delivering slow ball a lot of the time. If he didn't get to the ball in time, AJ is the one that goes in. And then it sort of, you know, because Sam James isn't a 12, he's almost, I think you've got Sam James and Rob Dupree trying to play 13 on that field. And then, you know, what really frustrates me about us is that when there are like three or four players in the whole squad who can go in and play nine, and they are like the Currys and Bevan Rod and, I don't know, McGinty, basically, who will, if the ball is at the back of a ruck, they'll go in, they'll pick it up, they'll deliver a half-decent pass to whoever's outside them, and that keeps the momentum flowing. And I think that's what we struggle with. We just slow our own momentum a lot of the time. And part of that is that AJ's going in, but then if you do end up with AJ having those options, he's on the back foot. So if he's got options on the front foot, that's great, but we don't keep the ball moving quickly enough to give him those options to then exploit those gaps. And that's what we need. We need more ball players in that across the field who can, if the nine's out of action, will go in, keep the ball moving. And we need AJ and George Ford next season to have that discipline, stay out of the ruck area and therefore be able to dictate play in that way. But, you know, if Nick Schonert or Jean-Luc Dupria arrive at a ruck, you know, they're not passing it out to the fly-off. They're taking it into the next phase. They're slowing it down, or they're just standing there guarding the ruck, slowing the ball down and deliberating over what to do next. And that's I think that's what's killing our attack, is that we'll have one or two good phases and then we just completely lose momentum because we're not in that structure of you know, someone at 9, AJ at 10, etc.
Well, to tie kind of all this together and actually move it forward, because there's a point James made where, again, you see why there's frustration with attack when you watch a game like this, because there was a couple of moments where Dan Dupree was lined up against Johan Lloyd and he just runs right over him like he's not there, like an elephant and a mouse sort of thing. And you do get the frustration, which is why are we, you know, we've got all these very dynamic back rowers in the team. Why are we not structuring our play to create these mismatches? So much of the time is spent, you know, throwing a Ewan Ashman or a Bevan Rodd, who are, I think you can argue, you know, maybe slightly undersized for the positions, you know, up against, you know, the sort of Premiership average, you know, into, you know, two out, one out tackles in the middle of the pitch. Right, okay, that's fair enough. But then you're not sort of utilising the space that's built for you by putting someone like Lou Diaga, you know, up against the Sam Bedlow and letting him run over. And I know it's not that easy. But you're not creating those mismatches, so you're not getting the game line dominance, so you're not getting quick ball. And the problem is, even when we were getting quick ball, we saw this in the first half, you know, a couple of really nice inside balls from Rob Dupree. The skill set is there, but we're not putting them in a position to succeed. The only counter to that is the play of one person in particular who I want to highlight, especially as a kind of standout performer, and that's Luke James. And I thought Luke James had an absolutely fantastic game at 15. I know we just keep going on about all the time, play him at 15, but A, we should, because the season's teetering on the brink and we need to know what we've got in him as an out-and-out 15 under Sanderson in this team. But watching him play, it was the sort of speed of thought and the clarity of his actions that I thought was really impressive. He was probably the only player on the day where every single time he had the ball in his possession, he made the right choice. A couple of times, he was fielding kicks at 15, and what he was doing is running the ball back at an angle so he could cut back inside the other way and beat a man and create more space for the pass out to AJ to kick to touch. There was instances where he got the ball in a bit of space and he actually accelerated into the gap between the defenders just to suck players in and then get the ball out. You saw it, obviously, for Rob Dupree's try. Tom Curry makes the space. It's one of the only times, you know, our forwards, you know, really sort of did that. The ball goes out to Luke James, and rather than sort of stand off or drift like we see so often, he just goes straight through the space, cut into the outside as well, not on the inside. And as a result, he draws in four defenders. And he does exactly what you want to see, which is that little bit of skill, the little offload out the back, and all of a sudden, Rob Dupree has got the easiest try he'll ever score. It's when you see it from someone like Luke James, it looks really, really simple, but we're just missing that intelligence and that kind of all-round skill set across our back line. And I just really wanted to highlight Luke James because I was watching him and you just think, oh yeah, this is an intelligent rugby player and this is what intelligent rugby players do. It's not do the same thing over and over again, and get the same results.
You're absolutely right. And I know we talked about this before, about the intelligence of playing rugby. And I wonder if that's what Sanderson's going out there and getting. I actually disagree. I think Luke James is a centre who could do a job at 15. In the medium term. In the short term, he's a better 15 option than Simon Hammersley for me and should play there for the rest of the year. He's probably the one player that we, along maybe with his brother, potentially, where we've seen the biggest drop-off in performance from Diamond to Sanderson for whatever reason. I've talked about maybe rotation not suiting him, etc. And I would just stick with him now. But what I really like about exactly what you said is those good decisions. He never makes a bad decision and he very rarely makes a mistake. Like, his skill set's really, really solid. Like, he seems to have time on the ball. And that's why I think, actually, ironically, he was our best back, right, at 15. But the biggest mistake when Van Rensburg got injured, who we can never rely on to play more than two games in a row, and that was another big problem, and it continues to be an issue for us, the fitness of Van Rensburg. How can you plan and train for the week if you don't know he's going to go down in the captain's run and stuff? It is an issue. But I would have moved Luke James to 12 and had Hammersley at 15. I actually think that because he's got that time on the ball, you get more bang for your buck with him at 12. And Sam James isn't a 12. I mean, Rob Dupree should have played there and Sam James further out from a defensive point of view. I mean, it's all mix and match, but that was a poor decision. And I don't necessarily blame Sanderson for that one, although obviously he makes the final call. But we've seen Sam James at 12 and so have the existing coaches on a few occasions over the past 5 years, and it's never gone well.
You do sometimes wonder how good would this Sale team be if it was just 15 Luke Jameses, because like you said, it's exactly what we've been preaching. We love the Dupreez, we love what they bring to the team, but watching them in space run into contact can be very frustrating. You just want to see, you know, players make smart decisions on the ball, and I think you're absolutely right, James. I think bringing Luke James with those attributes that he showed on Friday, maybe it doesn't change the final result, but maybe we all feel a bit more positive about the result as an effect of that. Luke James, I think, by far was the standout player. But just before we kind of, you know, put a bow on this one, Alex, was there anyone else you want to highlight as impressing, even in a losing effort?
I'm struggling.
You can say no, it's fine.
No, I think Luke James was by far the best player on probably the pitch. And I don't think anyone else did anything. I just think he was so far above the rest of the team that he deserves to be out there on his own. I think Tom Curry was good again, as he always is. I know he got sent off, but you know, again, we come back to that discipline issue. It was less so him and more a team yellow card, albeit we do make it difficult for ourselves. But no, I think it was pretty poor all round. And you know, look at the one good try we scored. Well, Ewan Ashman as well, actually. Ewan Ashman and Bevan Rod. And, you know, there's a theme here, isn't there? There's a theme of where the future of this Sale team lies. And I'll let James talk about it, because I can tell he's desperate to.
No, I don't need to talk about it, but I do think there's a case of how does Sanderson now balance for the rest of the season, like, the pressure to finish in a Champions Cup spot, right, with... Actually, we've got a load of youngsters like Tom Curtis and Kieran Wilkinson who just aren't getting any game time. And you see Charlie Atkinson running out for Wasps and stuff like that. And Jacob Umanga and Marcus Smith, they just throw these people in. And I just think to myself, well, is it time? AJ's off at the end of the season. You know, that kind of thing. And you see these local guys just bursting for the shirt. And when you're in the shit, that often has got us out in the past, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, even if you think about that result down in Gloucester earlier in the season, you know, we're missing quite a lot of players, and Gloucester were by far the better team, but we came back and get a losing bonus point and a try bonus point, you know, and it's up to poor Tom Curtis to have a chance at winning it. It's just, you know, like you said, you sometimes when you're in the shit, you know, you need that little bit of hometown pride to really push things through. And I think given where we are this year, it'd be interesting to see, do we just kick on with Bevan Rod at one, Ewan Ashman at two, Luke James at 15, Kieran Wilkinson as the backup 10, etc. I thought Gus Waugh had a pretty solid game as well. Tough outing, but you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with someone like Will Cliff, because actually we need to know now, can Gus Waugh be our third choice fly scrum half behind the likes of Quirk and De Klerk? And I think games like Fridays, yes, he didn't make a massive impact, but being under the cosh, being under pressure, what can you do in that situation? I thought he had a pretty solid game. With all that being said, you know, we've got to take a break again from the Premiership, and as we go into our next game, which is... let me just check my note. Ah, yes, away at Clermont. So it doesn't get any easier for Sale. Obviously, this is the away leg of our European Champions Cup pool. We were due to play Clermont at home before Christmas, so unfortunately, it got cancelled due to COVID. Still no clarity on what's happening in terms of the points there and whether or not they're going to try and make up the game. But, James, I guess the one thing we do know is that Sale are going to go to the Marcel Michelin in France for a Saturday tea time kickoff. How are Clermont looking?
Well, I've not got a full review this time, but I mean, they're in quite a difficult season, to be honest. They're seventh in the top 14. I think they've only had four games since the beginning of December for various reasons, like things, games getting cancelled and stuff. So, and they've won two, lost two in that time. They've won at home to Biarritz, who are like struggling in the relegation zone. They did manage to beat Toulouse on New Year's Day, 16-13, which is obviously a big result for them and gets their sort of season back on track. But you know, they've lost most recently to Racing. You know, not a bad outing really. They didn't send the first choice side, didn't shame themselves at all in that result. And of course, they lost, I think, to Ulster, didn't they, as well, which was a bit of a surprise. But yeah, they're just struggling for continuity. Lopez got injured at the beginning of the year, who really is their sort of, you know, the whole team's based around him from an attacking point of view. He's, you know, he's somebody who's obviously got international experience, but is now available all year round and been overtaken by probably, well, at least three fly halves in France. But he's back now. Mualo is back as well, who I think adds some physicality to proceedings. Yato and Fritz Lee, especially Fritz Lee's coming to the end of his career now. He's 33, 34. You know, he was a big player for them, picking up from number eight. Yato often starts at eight now instead of Fritz Lee. But it'll be interesting to see if they go back to playing them all together. I think quite a lot depends on the availability of Arturo Turia, who is kind of, you know, their kind of, you know, sort of grudge, dirty work type of back row. Thomas Lavanini's turned up at Clermont. So, you know, at least we'll have some competition for people getting sent off. Might end up sort of 13 against 13 at some point there for Sale against Clermont. So that might be a bit of banter. And one of the most beautiful rugby players in the world, Damien Penaud, just such a great rugby player. So they've got firepower. They've got some physicality up front, but they're bedding in a new front row, really. You know, there's been a bit of a turnover in terms of generation there. They've also gone down into the Pro D'Or and brought in, you know, a couple of front rowers. We know the Pro D'Or produces really good front rowers. Even so, there's a bit of a, you know, jump up to being, you know, finishing in the top four or six of the top 14 is quite a big jump. So they're in a bit of a rebuilding phase, I think, Clermont, and had a bit of disjointedness through injuries, bans and COVID cancellations. So I think it's a good time to be going down to face them, in short. You know, I remember the Rory Lamont try and all the rest of it, you know, when we went down to Clermont and won, I think it was in 2007, maybe 2008. And that was what I think probably the best ever performance by a Sale team, certainly in Europe. So I think we're up against it anywhere where we're traveling to France, if we manage to get there. But as things go, this is not a, top Clermont team of the past. This is a Clermont team in transition and we're going through a bit of difficulty at the moment. Don't forget, if they don't finish in the top six or seven, they're not going to get into Europe. So, you know, Clermont's a rugby town. We're complaining on this pod. I don't know if they have a fan podcast in Clermont, but if there is, they're at full-blown panic stations with submachine guns going off absolutely everywhere, tomatoing players in the street and all sorts, I'd imagine. So it'd be interesting to see maybe two low-confidence teams. Let's just go there and play some rugby.
Well, I'm glad you kind of ended on that point, because I want to ask you, Alex, you know, all that being said, this Clermont team on paper, you know, in theory is a lot stronger than Sale's, that they've got some absolute, you know, all-stars, as do Sale, to be fair. But you would back Clermont at home, you know, in this competition. So with that all being said, you know, we've just been having this conversation about what, you know, what do we do about the season, the direction, you know, what should we prioritise in? This Champions Cup game is probably coming at a bit of a bad time for Sale. We want to be playing in the Premiership and getting our form up there. How do you approach this? You know, do you say, like, look, I've finally got a relatively consistent team, I roll them out again and we see what happens? Or do you sort of use this opportunity a bit like we did a few years ago at Toulon and just sort of throw the youngsters out there and say, look, just go out, have fun and see what happens?
Somewhere in between the two, I think. I think it's a case of, you know, the likes of Gus Waugh and Kieran Wilkinson, as we were talking about earlier, need to get game time. And therefore, why not start them in this, but don't do that with, you know, a pack that is completely inexperienced, because then it's just not a good learning experience for them. And it's not you're not going to benefit anyone by doing that. You're going to have a pack that's, you know, battered and bruised. You're going to have a 9 and 10 who are just going to be devoid of confidence after it. So I think it's about, we've got enough depth in the pack, and I think we've got enough rotation ability there. Still put out a really good pack. You know, if we put out McIntyre, Taylor, Oosthuizen instead of Harrison, Ashman, Shona, or Rod Ashman, Shona, whoever, you know, there's loads of depth in that pack. And I think a strong pack, but just with, you know, like I say, I think Kieran Wilkinson, if he's fit, almost has to play. I don't see why, you know, he got that run of games at the start of the season, and it's just like we've got AJ back and we're desperately trying to cling on to AJ getting us up the league, and it's just not happening. So I'd be playing Kieran Wilkinson. I'd be playing, look at people like Aaron Reed, Tom Roebuck, bringing them in on the wings again, because I don't, you know, as you said, I don't think Yard had a great game. I don't think McGuigan and Yard have impressed massively recently. It almost looks like we're stuck in Steve Diamond mode 2 years ago. And because we're not dominating up front and we're not dominating collisions, those players don't look effective in that kind of game. You know, Yard is a great player for certain types of games, but, you know, we've got Tom Reed and Aaron Roe, Tom Roebuck and Aaron Reed. Christ. I haven't played for that long, I've forgotten the names. Why are we not playing them when we've got a massive dearth of pace in the back three? So that would be my, I'd like to see a relatively strong pack, albeit with, you know, some rotation, because we can afford to do it in the pack, and a slightly more youthful and relatively exciting backline, because, you know, Aaron Reed's not going to have any fear against Claremont, and if we put him in a bit of space, he's going to score because he's rapid. And I think, you know, it's that'd be the way I would go, but it's just a massively difficult one, isn't it? And I think wholesale change is not the answer, but equally, I think something has to change, doesn't it? Because we are in a, you know, I know we're a bit up and down at the moment because we said we were in a rut before Wasps, and then Wasps went well, and we're probably coming off that being really positive, and then we sort of almost go down the hill over Bristol, and the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But I do think that we need something to change, and I think it's a perfect opportunity. I know it's hard, and we're probably going to lose, but to be honest, if we roll out the squad that played against Bristol, we're probably going to lose anyway. I don't think, and even if we win, it won't be almost, this sounds ridiculous, but it won't be with the right performance and for the right reasons, because, you know, there's got to be a bit of a shake-up at this point. And we need to start playing 12s at 12 and 13s at 13 for me. I think, you know, the experiment is starting to wear thin, and Conor Doherty is a really good player. And if he's the best 12, play him. Don't put a 13 in at 12.
I agree. I think I'd really like to see Quirk, if he's fit, play with Wilkinson at 9 and 10. I'd really like to see Luke James, like, just continue that run at 15. You know, put him in lots of different environments and see how he fares. He did well against Bristol. Claremont will be a different proposition, but easy that steady in hand. And then, like you said, we don't really have too many options in terms of, like, academy players pushing through in that pack. You know, okay, maybe you can play Sam Dugdale, but, you know, Bevan Rod, you and Ashman are playing first team minutes anyway, so there's not really that much change there. So, like you said, it's a relatively strong pack, and then maybe a slightly more youthful backline. It'd be really interesting to see what we could do, especially because, you know, if we're going to beat Claremont, it's going to be because, you know, some of those raw physical attributes, things like pace and counter-attacking ability, are going to come to the fore. So with that all being said, let's do a quick prediction. I'm going Claremont 50, Sale 10. I just think, you know, we've not won away from home this season, apart from that game against Ospreys, and even then it was a bit up and down. I could really see Claremont just kind of getting all those little wins across the pitch and really kind of putting us to the sword, especially if we put a younger team out. That being said, you know, I'd love to be proven wrong, but I think this could be a real sort of one-sided affair if everything goes right for Claremont, based on our current form. Alex, what do you reckon?
I don't think Claremont have got the ability to put 50 points in anyone at the moment, the way they're playing, but that could be the worst prediction in history. I still think they're going to win. I think they're going to win relatively comfortably. I think we'll put up a bit of a fight, and we'll maybe be in the game for the first half of both halves, if that makes sense, but we'll start to fall away. So I'm going to go Claremont 34, Sale 18.
And James?
Oh, God. Could you imagine if, like, Matsushima comes back, or Raka or something like that, from injury just in time for us? I mean, then it could be your 50 points. As it stands, they haven't been playing. So I'm going to go a little bit closer. I'll go Claremont 30, Sale 17.
No, we're all predicting a Claremont win though, so it'll be hopefully, you know, very embarrassing for us when Sale spring a shock win away at Claremont. That's the dream anyway. Saturday night kickoff, you know, in France as well, so it'll be a good one. It'll be on TV as well, so it'll be, if nothing else, it should be an entertaining game to watch. So that's the podcast for this week. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. Thank you to everyone who sent in the 3-word reviews. Thank you, of course, as always, to Alex and James for joining me. If you are a subscriber to the Patreon account, we're just about to go and record a special bonus episode of the podcast where we're digging into the mailbag and answering some listener questions. So if you're not already signed up and you'd like to listen to that, do subscribe. It's only £2.50 a month. And it just helps keeps the lights on and servers running on our side. But yeah, thank you very much. We'll talk to you off the back of the Clermont game, and we'll hope my prediction doesn't come to fruition. And Alex, one more thing from yourself.
Two more things from me.
Number two one, more things.
The game's on Sunday. So if anyone's listening, just because we'll only get pulled up on Twitter for it. So just so everyone knows.
I could have sworn it was Saturday. No, yeah, sorry. Sunday the 16th, 5:30 kickoff our time, 6:30 their time, I think.
Yeah, and second thing is I just wanted to give a shout out to the Academy who battered Northampton at Hayward Road on Sunday. And if anyone's watched the highlights that have gone up on Twitter, the 10, Charlie Wardle, looks like Kieran Wilkinson's heir. And he went to Alty Boys, which is a little added feather in his cap. So a pretty positive. The future is still bright, no matter what.
That's 3 out of 3 for the
three team. Out of three, yeah. And three comprehensive out.
Yeah,
three.
Three still to go. One of them's Yorkshire, which you'd imagine we should win comfortably. So they're in with a very good shout of going to finals day down at Sarries later in the year.